This will be an interview with Ed Clayton, taking place on Tuesday, June 21st, 1994, with Chris Stewart.
Okay, we'll go ahead and start. I'd like to start, Mr. Clayton, by asking you when you first started working at White's.
1963. Don't remember the exact month. Probably about July of 63, I think, was when I started there.
How did you find out about the job?
I was looking for a job. I was just a young person. And I was looking for a job, and back then, like I said, most of the places, you know, Mebane or either White's or Kingsdown or whatever, and my dad worked there for like 25 years.
Really?
You know, he did not want to see me come in White's.
Really? You know, why didn't he want to?
Because he thought I could do better elsewhere, you know.
In terms of wage or in
wages
terms of
and working conditions and what have you, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then I was married and I had to have a job, so White's, you know, became available, so I went ahead and took the position up there.
And when, what department did you start off working in?
Hand sanding and cabinet room.
Oh, in the
cabinet room hand sanding.
Okay.
In other words, after the case goods were totally assembled, they came down to be hand sanded before they went upstairs to have the finish applied to it. And that was my job, was hand sanding out each drawer, each top, you know, the entire cabinet. My supervisor was John Tuck.
Tuck,
T-U-C-K.
Right.
He was a super nice, you know, he was a nice gentleman. And he was good to us. He really was, you know. And I started off like on nightstands and dressers and chest of drawers and this type of thing. And after a couple of months, they moved me to same dish tabletops. Me and another gentleman, George Mills, who's deceased now. And George and I worked together, 5 or 6 years, I guess it was.
You know. So you were partners, basically.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it was he and I. Sure was.
How did it work with the two of you?
Real well. Real well. Sure we did, because we each knew what the other one was going to do, and, you know, I would do one end table, he would do the other end, and you know, then we'd go on to the next table.
There were four of you
working
together?
Well, there was two other gentlemen on another table right beside us. Like Mr. Mills and myself were like on a table here, then there was two other gentlemen on this other table, you know, and we both would see who could do the most tables, you know. Back then, you know, people took a lot of pride, you know, in their work, and you know, so we sort of would sort of race each other, the
sounds
team,
like
to see who would do the most, or you know, whatever.
Sounds like a friendly competition.
It was. We had a good time. A lot of good folks. You know,
can you describe for me specifically what your work was? What exactly you did? You were on an assembly line. Did the tables go by in an assembly line? Okay.
No. In the sanding room, there was a sanding room up there, and the tables were machine sanded up there by machines. Okay. Then they were brought down to another part of the cabinet room in which the slide rails and the leaves were actually fitted into the tabletops themselves. Okay, once the tabletops and leaves were assembled together, then they were stacked on a rolling cart. They were stacked like 10, 12 high. Okay, then Mr. Mills and myself would go over and get them off the rolling cart and put them on our table. And then we would put the finishing touches and repair any dents or nicks or holes or setting the screws that had to be set to actually get the table ready for the finish to be applied to it. That was what we did, you know.
How many tables would you do in a day?
Oh, we could do 70, 80 tables a day.
That's that friendly competition.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sure enough.
Wow. How did you learn how to do? I mean, was Mr. Mills there first, and did he teach you?
He was there
how?
First. Yeah, yeah. And he sort of showed me how. Then Mr. Tuck was always available. You know, he showed us. You know, he showed me how. You know, like using a hand sander, an air powered little hand sander. Then you had to use sanding paper with your hands. You know.
Yeah.
Then you had to use like plastic wood. You know, to fill in this, the little dents and nicks and holes and whatever. Then you had to sand all that down. It would be perfectly smooth. You know.
So they didn't have any, at least in for the hand sanding, they didn't have any sort of specific training program.
No.
You sort of learned on the job.
You learned as you go.
What if you made a mistake?
Well, if you had a problem, you just always contact Mr. Tuck, and he would always be right there to tell you how to straighten it out and whatever.
What kinds of things, I mean, when I think of furniture making, I think of it as such a craft, you know?
Yeah. It was.
So say if something, I wish I knew more about how to make a table or how to sand a table, but say if there was a problem that you had with something and you didn't know how to fix it, would he just know what to do?
He knew what to do.
Can you think of an example of something like that? I mean, would the tables ever be uneven or something? Off balance?
No, not really. Not really. Mm-hmm. The only problem you would have sometimes if the table and the two ends, when you close the table up or when you put the leaves in it, maybe one leaf wouldn't quite be exactly level with the other. Or one of the, what am I trying to say? It was like a little border went around underneath mm-hmm. the table where mm-hmm. the legs attached to. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they wouldn't line up exactly
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have to take a shim, put a shim in it, or mm. sometimes you could sand it down. You could actually take the hand sander and sand it down to make it be flush
mm-hmm.
in there.
Did you work in the hand sanding area or room the entire time you worked there?
No. No. I worked there probably 4 years in the hand sanding department. That's where I started.
Mm-hmm.
I worked there. After the 4 years of that, Mr. Jack Self, who was one of the big superintendents.
Jack?
Self.
Self, like
S-E-L-F.
Mm, like
yeah.
a self.
Yeah, yeah. He was a nice, real quiet, easygoing, super nice gentleman. You know?
Yeah.
But he was sort of under Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean was the big, you know, big man up there then. And Mr. Self came down one day, wondering if I'd be willing to go upstairs and help coordinate the furniture when it came from our hand sanding department, when it went upstairs to convey it to, not convey it, but to get it coordinated
mm-hmm.
from downstairs onto the finishing line, mm-hmm. which actually the finish was applied up there. So I went up there and worked with him and Mr. Ray Grubb.
Ray Grubb?
Ray Grubb,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Now, Ray Grubb's a super nice.
Mm-hmm.
You need to meet him.
Is he still around?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Sure was
Jack Self just died.
Jack died.
Probably 6 months ago. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. If it's been 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But a super nice, gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Ray Grubb lives over here on North 7th. You need to talk to him. He can tell you some stuff about applying the finishing, the actual finishing to the furniture.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Super nice.
So how long were you then doing the coordinating of the, sort of like preparing the
tables? I'd say it's probably 4.5, maybe 5 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, until I quit.
Okay.
Up there.
So can you describe to me then what this job, this other job that you were doing was like? What exactly did you do?
Okay, let's use the tables, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once they were, the hand sanding process was completed. We had to hand sand the legs, be sure each leg tailor fit each individual slot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, once all that process was done, then it went upstairs on a conveyor belt. It went upstairs, and it was stored up there, because naturally sometimes they produced more finished goods up there than they were able to process on the finishing line at one time, so they were stored in the area. Okay, now each table had four legs. Okay, now each chest of drawers. Okay, for example, if you open a drawer, so you look down in it, it's got a little sections that's divided off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, let's say the chest of drawers had three drawers that had two sections. That's six dividers. Okay, plus the back was not applied at that time, plus any other hardware that had to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So my job was, when it came from downstairs, I had to be sure that if I put one dresser on there, I had to be sure I had the back, I had the dividers, and I had any other hardware
mm-hmm.
or material that had to be finished in a mahogany color. Or they had another color called white, bone white. And they had several different colors. My job was, when it came from downstairs, I had to get a lot number, like lot number 456. I had to be sure I got everything in that lot number, from the chest of drawers, the tables, the legs, the backs, the panels, anything else that went with that. I had to be sure it all got on the conveyor belt
mm-hmm.
for the guys to actually start finishing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to coordinate the downstairs, mm-hmm. stuff coming from downstairs, had to coordinate all that together and be sure all of it got on the finishing line. So when it came off the finishing line, everything would be there for the guys from the other end of the finishing line to actually get it ready to pack it.
So you were kind of the bridge between the sanders and the sort of, I don't want to say rough work, but this.
Right, the hand sanders and the cabinet fitters. Yeah. That was my job.
So how was that sort of being, I'm imagining that if it went well, it was good. But if it was not, I mean, if there was like lots of stuff coming up from downstairs and or not enough stuff getting upstairs, that you would kind of in between these people,
that's
that it could get a little hairy sometimes.
That's exactly right. But like I said, the Mr. Ray Grubb, once he got on the line, then I worked with Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And Ray would come to ask me, Ed said, all right, lot number 456, how many pieces do we have? How many chest of drawers? How many mirrors? How many nightstands? How many tables have we got coming? So he could talk to his people to get the proper material that was needed there for the process, finishing process to start. So a lot of paperwork involved.
Oh, okay.
There. So I wouldn't have to tell Mr. Grubb, hey, I got 500 tables and I got 700 chests and I got 300 nightstands.
Mm-hmm.
I got 400 headboards
mm-hmm.
coming. Okay. So then once that was started, then I went back to Mr. Jack Seth. And Jack was sort of coordinate between me and the hand sanding department
mm-hmm.
and the guys that actually did a fitting downstairs. He would coordinate with me and say, Ed said, you got 500 dressers coming up today. Okay. So Mr. Ray Grubb couldn't process but 200, then I had to store 300.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had to turn right around and pull the 300 back out while this particular finish was in process.
Did you have people who were working for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
How many people were working for you?
I had two. I had two working for me up there.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Barry Richmond was one of them. Richmond. Now, James Richmond, excuse me. Which I think he's deceased now, also. And Barry Burgess
mm-hmm.
helped me some.
So the three of you, you'd have to store these things yourself. You'd have to be sort of lifting and moving into storage.
I helped do it, but they did most of the lifting and storing. I helped, you know, if I got my paperwork caught up,
right.
then I would jump in there with them and help them restack or help them remove. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, if we had 500 dressers coming up and Ray could only run 200,
right.
then I'd have to pull them off the conveyor belt as they came up and slide them. Sometimes we'll slide them the length of this house, you know, 50, 60 feet, to get them stored. Then when I got ready to run them, they turn and pull them all back out again and get them on conveyor belt. So I had to coordinate all this stuff.
Where exactly were they stored?
Upstairs.
So you're talking downstairs and upstairs, and I'm trying to figure out what you mean
Explain to me what you mean by downstairs and upstairs.
Okay. Downstairs is where all of the drawers were actually fitted into the dressers, the nightstands, the chest of drawers. Also, it's where the tabletops were actually machine sanded, and the runners put on the tables. Mm-hmm. That was all done downstairs. Mm-hmm. Okay. Once all that was completely assembled, just imagine that stereo over there mm-hmm. has been totally no finish whatsoever mm-hmm. on it. Once that was completely sanded down and ready for the finish to be applied, then it went on a conveyor belt and went upstairs. At which time, like I said, if I had to store 300 dressers, I would store them in a big room up there. Probably the room was a couple hundred feet by 50 feet mm-hmm. up there.
Was White's two stories, basically, the downstairs
there were
and
really
the upstairs?
There was a basement.
There was a basement.
There was a basement in which the veneer department, which a lot of the veneer
okay.
was applied, especially the tabletops, tops of the nightstands, the chest of drawers, dressers, whatever. That was all done in the basement
okay.
down there. All right, then the upstairs, well, confusion in that, but the downstairs also had the machine room, mm-hmm. which is on a total far east end of the factory.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the actual rough lumber mm-hmm. came in and was cut to specified lengths and shapes and routed and whatever. That's
People
where my dad worked.
Call that the
was.
Rough mill? Was that a different
yeah,
place?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a different department
okay.
down there. That's where my dad worked. He'd run a, what do you call a rip saw?
Oh.
Down there.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a totally different department
uh-huh.
down there. And within that, there were like two or three different departments within that.
Okay.
Down there. In other words, okay. the rough lumber, when I say rough lumber, I'm talking about the lumber that you see stacked outside in these big stacks out there coming back from sawmill.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it came in through the machine room down there.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Dad's job was to cut the timbers 4 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
Or 6 feet long, whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. And then it went over to what they call a joiner, which is sort of got the rough off of it,
mm-hmm.
so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, once the rough was taken off of it, then it was sent to the sanding room over there, and they machine sanded over there, especially the tops and the backs and the sides and the tops of the chest of drawers, the dressers, the tables, this type thing over there. Then it was brought back out into the hand sanding department or the fitting room, the cabinet up there, which the guys over there then put the drawers and the dressers and the mirrors and dressers and nightstands, chest of drawers over there. And then more down towards where I was at, we had two guys over there who actually put the rails on the tables.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the rough stuff was done downstairs
mm-hmm.
on the first floor.
Mm-hmm. Why, you said your dad didn't want you to work there because of the wages and the working conditions. What was it that he didn't like about it?
Well, like you said, he thought, you know, it was sort of a dead end job down there. And he
That's
thought, you know, if he wants to see his son, you know, everybody wants to see, their parents want to see their children do better than they are doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's basically what the whole thing was.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then, so if you got into White's, you know, you more or less were stuck there your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he thought he could do better
mm-hmm.
working elsewhere.
When
it was not that he didn't like the working conditions
right.
or the people. It was not that at all. He just thought I could do better.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't want to see me get into that.
Mm-hmm.
I think was the bottom line there.
Yeah. What were your wages when you first started?
Oh Lord!
I love this question. I'm on.
I don't even remember.
Were you paid by the piece or were you paid by the hour?
By the hour. It was, I don't know, $3-4 an hour.
Was there any incentive for you to do more pieces? It's, I mean, besides your friendly competition amongst
no.
yourselves.
No.
Mm-hmm. What about when you were the sort of coordinator person? Was there any incentive there to...
No.
Why do you think you got picked for that job?
I really don't know. I really do not know.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Do you think that you were just a good, just a really good worker down there in the sanding room?
Well, I was there every day, you know. Mm-hmm. I worked, you know, while I was there. I wouldn't have seen it. Why they picked me, I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, must say, I came up to me one day and wanted to see me in the office, and I said, uh-oh, what have I done now? You know. So when I went in the office, he said, and told me what he had available, and that he would like for me to try it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Ed, I'd be more than happy to work with you and to help you. You know, I said, well, sure, I'll give it a try. You know, anything to get out of the sanding room for right then, you know. Yeah. So then when I got up there, I got Mr. Grubb, went to Mr. Grubb's office, sat down, and the three of us talked. And I think he gave me, I think, 50 cent an hour raise or something.
So it was a step up
for
you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was it like leaving your partner? Or did you leave your partner?
I think Mr. Mills had passed away.
By then?
By that time, or
really?
Sure. He was out sick, I forgot, I think, what the case was there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you a little bit about the sanding room, or doing the sanding. Did you ever, were you breathing in the, I've refinished some furniture, yes, in my garage, you know.
Oh, sure.
But, so you were breathing in, what was it like in the room itself?
Well, they had big fans.
Did they?
They had big fans, and in the summertime the windows were open, and all of this, and they provided us with dust masks if we chose to wear them, which that was more of a problem than it was without
it. I've heard.
You know, as a result, nobody hardly ever wore the
things. That's
but they did furnish them if we wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can imagine, like you said, refinishing in your garage, you're going to have a certain amount of dust and all of this, and you're going to inhale some of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you came out at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you were dusty and dirty and whatever, but that was, you take it with a grain of salt.
What about the heat in the summertime?
North
Carolina summers are like, oh.
We had a ball with that.
Like
I said, the windows were open and had the fans, and they were blowing hot air. Really what they were doing, you know. But you got accustomed to it.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't really bother that bad. And then, of course, there was, you know, always water fountains and all this stuff. You could stop and get water or whatever. So the heat it didn't bother me personally. It really did not.
Did you work an 8-hour day?
Oh, yes.
Were there seasons during different times of the year where you were doing a lot more work, maybe in preparation for a furniture show or something, where you had to get more work out? I mean, was the work heavier during certain parts of the year, or was it pretty consistent throughout?
It was pretty consistent throughout.
It was.
The furniture shows that you're talking about, now that put more work sometimes on people down in the machine room and the sanding room up there, because you had to do what they call run samples.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you would do, or a regular production run, they say you would do, or I said 500 dressers and mirrors a while ago. Or a sample run, you would do 30 dressers. You would do 30 chest of drawers, 30, you know, tables, this type thing. And the problem there was, you was constantly, by the time you get set up and get going, you'd have to stop and reset up for the next little piece or whatever there. And then, here again, the samples, when you got upstairs, the finishing department up there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was a lot of changing. Also, you know, changing the different materials for the different stains and different finishes that you want to achieve. So it was a lot of work, more or less changing, you know, from one setup to the next, you know, to run the samples through.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as more work one season than another, no, I wouldn't say so.
Mm-hmm. When you are working, either Well, let's start with down in the sanding, the hand sanding. You mentioned this kind of friendly competition that was going on. Were there other kinds of, were there things that you would do to pass the time, or were you, I mean, did you have to be very concentrated on what you were doing? In other words, you know, these four guys together, working together, were there, I don't know, telling stories, talking, singing?
All the time.
Really?
All the time. Yeah, all the time. Because you knew what you had to do. You basically knew how to do it. And you could do that and talk and tell stories and laugh and cut up and pick on everybody else at the same time, but yet still get your work done. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of storytelling, a lot of picking on other employees and other employees picking on me. And, you know, mm-hmm. just a general fun. Well, it was a lot of work, but at the same time, everybody laughed and kidded each other and cut up and went on, but got the work done.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Sounds like the work was hard work, but that the people who you were working with were people that you enjoyed working
exactly.
with.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Did you learn shortcuts? Were there shortcuts that you could take after having been there for a while and sort of learning the job, you know, and I'm still talking in the sanding room.
Sure.
Once you know.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. What kinds of things, can you remember what kinds of things?
Well, you just knew, like, there's just tricks of the trade.
Right.
You know, like, nothing specifically pops out of my mind as a, what you would really call a shortcut. Well, it was like, you know, if you found a hole in a leaf on the table, you know, you just had to putty it up,
mm-hmm.
you know, burn it in and sand it off. And I don't guess you really would call it a shortcut. You just, mm-hmm. you knew what you had to do.
Mm-hmm.
You went ahead and did it, and, you know.
Did you consider your work dangerous down there?
No.
Did you know of anybody in the areas that you worked in who got hurt while working, you know, on no?
No.
Were there different areas of the plant that might have been more dangerous than others?
Oh, yeah.
If you're not
yeah.
careful, I mean,
yeah.
if you're not aware
yeah.
of.
Like the machine room.
Right.
All those rip saws and band saws and stuff like this. In fact, my dad got through, his fingers cut off.
He did.
Down there. Yeah. So I'd say the machine was probably more of the dangerous
mm-hmm.
Work than anywhere else in the plant.
Mm-hmm. How did people, do you remember people sort of taking care of each other in those areas where they knew it, you know, where you knew it was going to be more dangerous? Were there ways in which, you know, workers, employees would take care of each other to make sure that people
oh,
wouldn't
yeah.
get hurt?
Yeah, yeah. That was all the time. I mean, and then all the departments up there that I was in, you know, everybody sort of looked at it to each other
mm-hmm.
up there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the way Dad's finger, his fingers cut off, the saw of which he operates had what he called a knee trigger or handle on it. Instead of activating the saw with his hands, he just pressed his knee against it
mm-hmm.
to make the saw.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very careful. But this particular day, it was cold in the wintertime. This particular day, a board slipped or whatever. He just reached over and grabbed the board. And when he did, his foot slipped. And his knee hit the trigger on the saw. And it was too late then, you know. So, you know. But.
What happened when your father got hurt? I mean, what was the process? What would happen? When did he lose all three fingers at once? Okay, so do you remember that day? What happened?
How did
he go to the hospital? Did
oh yeah, yeah. And I was not there. I think that was before I went to work.
Mm-hmm.
In there, we got a call and it said Daddy had been in an accident at the plant and they carried him to the county hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got there, you know that they already had him in surgery. Working on his fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he lost them, but
mm-hmm.
Then, of course, the company's insurance paid it all, and I think
mm-hmm.
they probably give him a little settlement, whatever, I don't know exactly how much.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Did you ever hear of something called the Hard Luck Fund for employees? We've heard people talk about employees who created a fund for people who might have had injuries or something happen where they would actually put money in a pot or something.
They had a, if I understand it right, they had the vending machines that they had up there. And I understand the profits from the vending machines went to just exactly that, you know. And then in situations where people needed more assistance or whatever, the employees sometime would get together and make up money, you know, to help a family until a man got back to work or whatever the case might be. But that's the only, quote, hard luck fund.
That you heard of?
That I know about.
How many men and women, were there women working in the plant when you were there?
No.
Not during the entire time?
Well, let me back up there just a little bit. Yeah, they were upstairs in the finishing room.
Right.
They were up there. But as far as downstairs, in the machine room, cabinet room, or downstairs, what they call it, the basement or the veneer room, no. There were no women there. But there were women upstairs whose job up there was like wiping off sealer or wiping off varnish, whatever the case may be, on conveyor, on an assembly line. There were women up there. Yeah.
How many women were working when you were there? An estimate.
I don't know. I'd say 10, 15.
Do you remember your father telling you when women started working in the plant? Or had women been working in the plant the whole time that he was there?
I think women came in later.
Yeah.
I think. Dad never said too much about women working in the plant. But they were there working. In fact, they came in when I was still there and worked upstairs and finished the department up there.
In fact, when we... when Bill was taking pictures, most of the women worked in the finishing department still. Very few women worked in other parts.
I don't remember any women working in the other departments, not when I was there.
What about black men or Latino men, Hispanic men? Were there...
Lots of black men up there. Hispanic, Mexicans, they came later.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Were the jobs, did people sort of congregate together? So did the black men sort of congregate together during different kinds of jobs, like the women congregated together in the finishing room?
Not really.
So they were pretty much all over the plant? It sounds like you worked pretty closely with your supervisors, that worked well for you.
I had to, you know, to keep everything going because I had to know what was coming up. I had to know what was needed there, so then I had to work between these two guys, to let them know what I needed,
right,
to get the production out of there. Yeah.
Yeah, you've talked a lot about the benefits of that. Did you feel like there were any sort of negative side effects to working closely with supervisors? Not at all?
Not at all. Not at all. I enjoyed it. I really did.
Really? Sounds like they were really supportive.
They were. Very. Yeah. Very. Yeah. Because they knew, after I trained up there and got familiar with what I was doing, they knew that I knew what was needed. Yeah. And if I told them I needed 20 cases, they got them to me. You know, so I could, in turn, get them on the assembly line to be finished to get the quota out of there.
Right.
Yeah. They listened to what I said.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
You knew what you were doing.
I knew what I was doing. Yeah. And they listened to what I said. You know.
What about rules at White's? Were there rules about, say, smoking or eating in the factory? Were there specific rules?
There was no smoking in the factory. You had to go outside on break. There was no eating or drinking allowed. in the factory. Mm-hmm. Other than, of course, water or whatever like that. As far as bringing food and drink in there, no. Mm-hmm.
Did they have break rooms for you, like when you were took lunch or stuff? So where did you go eat for lunch?
I don't, in front of the building out there.
I've heard you that, out that, in front of the building.
You see that bench out there? Uh-huh. That was break time. Uh-huh. That was a dinner table. That was it right there.
And I've also heard about people hanging out the windows and talking to the folks who are down at
all
break
the time. All the time.
It sounds like that was
all the time.
So much fun. I mean,
we used to have water fights up there.
Water fights. Really?
And sometimes, if, you know, somebody would be outside. Somebody go upstairs and pull a bucket of water on your head.
Bomb.
We had a good time. Literally.
Now, I know that when Bill got in there, there was a break room for folks, and there were places for people to eat. But when you were working...
came a little bit later.
When you were working, you... Now, this was in the wintertime or the summertime. You were out on the bench eating. Cold sometimes, huh? Rainy sometimes, too, huh? Well, I suppose when you got water dumped on your head, it's just like...
But we had some good times. Really did. It was a good bunch of people mm-hmm. throughout the entire factory that I worked with. Mm-hmm. You know, you could have one sour grape now and then, mm-hmm. but 99% of people were very supportive of each other. Everybody worked. Everybody laughed. Everybody kidded each other and went on.
It sounds like there were a lot of... That people... Whites hired people from this area, so you knew.
You knew everybody.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that added to the
close-knit. Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Did you have dress codes? No. What was your, what would you wear in the sanding room when you were sanding? Just regular clothes?
Yeah.
So you didn't have any work clothes?
No.
So you really would come covered with...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Aprons? Did they have any aprons?
They did have aprons. If you mm-hmm. wanted to wear them, they did have aprons for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Did you want to wear an apron?
I did when I was especially working on tables. And I did wear an apron when I was working on tables.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I was always, you know, leaning over the table, you know, trying to reach the other side or other end or whatever. But I did have an apron
mm-hmm.
and I wore them, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, no.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned again, I again go back to your friendly competition. I love that. The sense that I'm getting is that you really had a lot of control over how much you got done.
Oh, sure.
Was there any time during the time that you were working, and not necessarily in the sand room or when you were coordinating, but even in any other place in the factory that you knew of, where there were deliberate slowdowns, where people would deliberately slow things down, either because they thought work was going too fast or because there was too much to...
Upstairs in the finishing room,
mm-hmm.
I knew of instances where things would slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some cases, it was running too fast to do the job and do it right.
To do it right. So people took great pride in being able to do it right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Back then, back in the 60s when I was there, most of the people in there took great pride mm-hmm. in their workmanship, the mm-hmm. quality of the work that they did mm-hmm. up there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned that this was in the finishing room. And you also mentioned earlier that women worked in this finishing room.
Right.
Was it the women who instigated slowing down? No.
No.
So, no. Would they follow or would they not follow?
The women?
Yeah.
They would follow whatever the men told them.
Okay.
To do. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So there were times where you thought up there anyway that in order to do a good job, the work was going too fast in order for people to do a good job.
Well, and that they would slow down. It was not what I thought. But the guys who actually worked on the conveyor line itself...
They thought.
Mm-hmm. They thought it was much too fast mm-hmm. to get the proper quality mm-hmm. that should be achieved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some cases, they slowed it down.
During the time that you were there, and how many years were you there, sir?
About 9 years.
Do you think Do you think that the quality remained as high?
Pretty much the same.
Okay.
Pretty much the same.
Because we've heard from other people that especially when Hickory came in.
Oh, he went downhill in a hurry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I have friends who worked there up until the end, and they said it's the last. I mean, they would show Hickory defects or stuff that needed to be changed, and they would push it on through and say, oh, let it go. And the result, it came back to them.
Why do you think that whites, that the white family was able to keep such a high quality product going? I mean, for such a long time, because it was an incredibly high quality product. Do you think, you know, you hear these days that you can make more money by putting more out, right? That you put more out. But yet, they didn't necessarily do that. I mean, they put out a really high quality
piece. That's the bottom line. Because whites, the men that they hired, the men that they had working for them back when I was there, took great pride in the quality of their workmanship, the quality of the furniture that went out of there. And they were more interested in the quality as more so than the quantity. It's like I just said just now, the people on a conveyor line in the finishing room up there would slow it down to achieve the correct finish. So when it came off the conveyor belt, then it was actually ready to be boxed up and shipped out.
It sounds sort of like the employees had a lot of control over the quality of
that's
the
exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
That it wasn't so much the white family, but rather
it was the employees.
What was it? Why do you think the employees had so much invested in this?
Personal pride, but doing a good job.
Do you think you said that there weren't necessarily incentives, either monetary incentives or other
whites.
Kinds of...
Up until the mid-60s, you used to pay a very, very good Christmas bonus.
They did.
Oh, yeah. And they cut it out mid to late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But they used to pay a healthy bonus at Christmas time. I remember the first two I got. In the first 2 years I was there at Christmas time, I mean, it was a good bonus. And then they said they wouldn't make enough money or some reason, and they cut them out
mm-hmm.
up there.
Mm-hmm.
But the employees themselves took great pride
mm-hmm.
in their work
mm-hmm.
up there.
It sounds like, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like the fact that, you know, that you did have basically friends and neighbors working together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that really contributed to taking a lot of pride.
It really did.
Mm-hmm. Did you buy White's furniture yourself? Do you have White's furniture?
No.
Mm-hmm. How come?
I couldn't buy it.
Couldn't
too
afford
high.
It?
Mm-hmm. It was too high.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm. Do you know people who did?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you?
I bought a secondhand bed. It was White's. But I bought it. Secondhand from somebody else outside the factory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you know any of the White family?
Yeah.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of I've met Steve White
right.
and his wife Margaret.
Right.
They've come around a couple of
right.
times.
Right.
They came to the show
right.
a couple of times. Did they? I know Margaret worked in the
office.
Yeah. Did any of the White family come down into the factory and
Sam White, which is Steve's son,
mm-hmm.
he came through. Okay, and I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Mr. White's first wife, I remember her.
You do?
Yeah.
Why would Sam White come through? Would he just come through to see folks, or?
No, he would come through come from the front office, coming down to the factory office, which must have been. You know, the supervisor down there.
Mm-hmm.
He'll just walk through, say
mm-hmm.
good morning, how are you, and keep going.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What about Steve White's first wife? Was she working there
no,
as well?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I guess she was just a housewife.
Mm-hmm.
She never worked that I knew of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did she ever come to the factory?
Not out in the factory, no. Mm-hmm. She may have come to the front office up there on occasions, but not out in the factory. I never saw her out there.
What were employees, how did the employees in the factory, or, you know, if you want to just talk specifically about you, what were their feelings about the White family, about, you know, their relationship to the factory, to the community at large, or, you know, what did people think about?
I guess everybody had a positive attitude, I guess, towards them. As far as I know, there wasn't a whole lot ever said.
Really?
To be honest, wasn't a whole lot ever said.
I know there's been a lot said, especially since Hickory came in, and people that we've talked to have really sort of longed for the days of when, you know, the White family owned exclusively the factory, and have really had quite wonderful things to say about the family. I think partially because they really wish that it just never.
But
it's
still there. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think the closing has impacted this town and community in general?
I'm sure it's hurt the economy somewhat, because some of the older folks who probably was near retirement, but, you know, wasn't quite ready to retire yet.
Yeah.
You know, I understand most of the other people, a lot of them have found out.